Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Rightstream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rightstream and hashtag Rightstream. Thanks for listening to the Rightstream Radio Network.
Welcome to Just Believe Radio on the Rightstream Network. I am your host, Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, and author of the book, Just Believe, and, of course, a radio show host as well for Just Believe and for Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, which is a women's topic show that airs on Fridays at 7 p.m., all on the Rightstream Network. Each Sunday, our show on Just Believe and our airs at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we have different experts every week in the field of spirituality. We have psychics, so we do live psychic readings. We have guests on that are experts in holistic health, metaphysical topics, the paranormal, all kinds of different things. If you know of someone who would like to be on the show, or you are someone who's an expert in a field who would like to be on the show, please feel free to give me a send me an email, and you can do that using lisa@lisatarvis.com. If you have any questions today for our guests, you can call in at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. You can call that number and just listen to the show, or you can call that number and press 1, and you'll show up in the queue, and I will get you as soon as there's an appropriate moment in the show. If I didn't already mention it, the chat room is also open, so anybody who wants to go into the chat room and ask any questions can also do that. You can find that at the bottom of the page, the show page. So anyway, today I want to talk, we're going to be talking to Alan Anderson, and he and his wife, Linda Anderson, founded the Angel Animals Network in Minneapolis in 1996. They have 15 books about the spiritual qualities of animals, and have been featured on Oprah.com, The Today Show, ABC's Nightly News, BBC Radio, Washington Post, LA Times, Amazon.com's Hot 100, and BNN's Top 10, and Dr. Alvin Augustus's Jones Show, Alvin Augustus Jones Show, among others. So obviously they've gotten a little bit of attention already, and we're happy to have them on our show tonight to talk about all of their books, but specifically I believe their latest book, and it's all about animals and the spiritual nature of animals. So I want to welcome right now Alan Anderson to the show. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you for having me on Just Believe. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm happy to have you on. I'm really excited. This is a fun topic because we love doing, I love talking about animals, and I think animals have such a spiritual side to them. I mean, I think they're just such spiritual beings, and I love being able to talk about that. And you know, starting off, you're promoting a book right now. Is this your newest book?
Yes, it's actually a memoir about me and the experiences I went through a time in my life where I really did need a dog at my side, and the perfect match happened through this process.
And that was a dog named Leaf, right?
A dog named Leaf.
Yes,
and he's actually sitting on the chair right next to me licking his paw.
Well, that's cute. That's good. I love that. I love my dogs too, and I think in your you have a, this story is really an interesting one, and you call the story of you and of Leaf a dual journey. And you say that the two of you came together at exactly the right time to help each other heal. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we both had some traumatic past. We went to the shelter to look for a dog after we lost our beloved yellow lab about 6 months earlier. She was just the joy of our lives, and we were feeling very much it was a quiet house without her. So we decided to just take a look at the shelter to see what we, you know, see who would be there that would like to come home with us. And you know, have you ever thought to yourself, we'll just go look, and it really never happens where you just go look.
Yeah.
So we went to the shelter.
Yeah, believe me, I know. I've tricked my husband into a pet or two that way.
Before I go further, what are your pets' names?
I have an Australian Shepherd who is named Boomer, and I have a Shih Tzu who is named Zeus.
Wow, those are great names.
Yeah, I get a little crazy with names. I'm like, it all of a sudden just comes to me. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. Zeus is.
Well, aren't they kind of telling you what they like to be called? You know, sometimes.
That's like kind of what it feels like. You know, it's weird. I always pick, like, Zeus got his name because, I mean, first of all, he's tiny, and Zeus is just such a big name for a tiny dog, you know, and it just was funny. But my husband went to aeronautical school. He's an airline pilot. And his call sign in college was Zeus. So that's where it came from. It was kind of like, again, a dual meaning kind of thing, because his call sign was Zeus, and then I'm like this little itty-bitty dog, you know, and my husband thought he was hot stuff, you know, because, you know, he was in aeronautical university. So, and, you know, it was just funny. And, you know, and to think, well, this dog who thinks he's this little 11-pound dog who thinks he just, like, runs the universe, you know.
And he probably does.
You know, he runs this universe, I can tell you that.
A Boomer probably behaves around him, too.
Boomer actually, it's been good for Boomer because Boomer's a little, I think Australian Shepherds have, it's weird, I think he's, like, they have this protective side and then they have this herding side. So it's like he gets confused, like, I think sometimes what his actual role is supposed to be. And it's like, he's like, he tries to kill anyone that rings the doorbell. You ring the doorbell and I answer the door. I mean, we have to lock him in a crate or he will bite you. I mean, he just, you know, will nip. But then when you go to leave, he tries to herd you back in the house. He won't let you leave. So it's bizarre.
He definitely has a job and he knows what
his
job is.
Yes, absolutely. So what was Leaf's job?
Well, you know, we went to the shelter and we went ahead and found him. And he was about a year old, and he had been dumped at the back door. It was abandoned. That's all they knew about him. About a year old, and apparently just from looking at him, he was kind of scattered, and we didn't know to what extent, but we found out later as we brought him home that he had been, you know, we would consider to be abused because he was afraid of being touched, and he had all these issues. And he really was kind of traumatized. So we brought him home after we walked around one of our local lakes, and he loved to jump into the leaves and roll around. So I said to Leaf, now his name was Leaf, I said, Leaf, and he popped his head up and he came right over. Prior to that, because he had been dropped off at the back door on a Harley motorcycle, everyone just called him Harley without knowing his name or his background. And finally, you know, he was getting really kind of beginning to understand that maybe this is a different life that he had before. And he, you know, he was so sweet. He looked so cute, and he just was adorable, his looks. But when we brought him home, we realized that he really had never been inside before. He had a hard time trying to walk on carpet, all the other things that dogs, you know, would normally do.
Right.
So we brought him home, and that night we were about to go to sleep, and he started howling. We had him next to our bed on a little doggy bed. We had a nightlight on. We had all the things that would hopefully make him feel comfortable. But he just couldn't handle it. And he was howling all night. I would get down and I would take him outside and I would walk him and I'd bring him back in. This was all night, 1, 3, 5, all night long. Uh-huh. My wife, Linda, and I didn't get any sleep at all. And I realized that he had been traumatized. Because even when I reach down to pet him, he would tremble, and he would just freeze, and he would do some snapping, which was really shocking, but he really has some issues. And I realized in the morning when he was snoring on the floor, and Linda and I were just exhausted, that we were going to have to do some things. So we got some herbal things that would help him calm down. We did all the things that you do after, you know, the vet visit, make sure he was healthy. But he just couldn't sleep at night. He was traumatized. He just couldn't sleep. He would howl all night. He would squeal. He wasn't a house trained at that point, so I was constantly taking him outside. But I learned one thing from that. I brought him into the house after these walks, and I would take him to my easy chair in my office, and I would lay him on my heart, my chest, where he could listen to my heart, and he would begin to stop shaking. He would begin to stop feeling so fearful. And I would whisper to him. I would say, Leaf, you are loved. No matter what, you're going to be here. This is going to be your family. This is what, you know, and I would just relax him and whisper to him. I would actually, because I found this to be helpful to me, I would do some chanting. I would chant a word and a couple of words just to sing him a little bit, sing him a kind of a relaxing song that he could relax in. And finally, on my chest, which was really surprising, he would start snoring. And when he started snoring, I would start snoring. So we both got some sleep, and that was really the key to us beginning to have a little more healing on that aspect of his life. So, you know, he would do this. He would every night, and we would, you know, week after week, finally he began to get accustomed to living with us. Well,
right.
not soon after we adopted him. And, you know, my background was kind of odd, too. I mean, he was traumatized. He didn't trust people. He didn't like people. He didn't like people. He just was in a situation where he has never learned that sometimes people can be nice until we adopted him. Well, I came from a background. I worked about 8 years after, of all things, getting a journalism degree, and I worked as 8 years as a police officer in Atlanta. And of all the things to do is to have someone who wanted to be a journalist go into that kind of work. Maybe at the time I was thinking I'd get more storylines for my writing and all that, but at the time I began to like it, and I began to help people, but I began to see people differently. I saw them as either very, very bad or just victims who were not able to have enough sense to get out of their situations. It was just week after week, month after month, year after year of living and working in a big city where those type of things happen all the time.
Yeah.
And I was doing a good job, and I was having good statistics, and I did all the, but I began having a skewed view of humanity and people. And I began really not looking at people as individuals, or as, I just saw them as problems with issues and all these traumas. So when I adopted him, and Linda and I adopted him, we both sort of came from the same place. You know, I left that police work, and I came up to Minneapolis, and we found nice jobs with computers and stuff, and I was working at an office, and I still had that skewed view of people. And you can't get away from that view once you kind of get it ingrained into your consciousness.
Right.
I'm sure you've seen that, and you've helped people in all sorts of situations. They might come, yeah. And maybe they may begin to heal and look at things differently because they realize that it's just an old tape that seems to play all the time and you can't get out of it. Well, Leaf and I came together and we looked at each other and we realized that we have a lot of healing to do, both of us. And it was really sweet to see him beginning to trust and to see me actually watching him and writing notes and observing him and writing little short pieces about him as he began to grow and become more trusting and actually do enjoy life a little bit, act like a puppy or act like a young dog instead of someone who just looks around in fear. And I began looking at myself a little bit more. Well, soon after I adopted him, I had some dizzy spells. And I also had some really awful images of some of the things that happened during police work, which was years earlier. I had gotten away and moved into another job. And I really began wondering what was going on with me because it was really bad, the dizzy spells. I thought it was an inner ear infection. And my wife, Linda, said, well, you're going to go see a doctor. And, of course, you know, once a spouse tells you to do something, you pretty much have to do it. I think you know that from probably, you know.
It's just easier. It's just easier to give in. Yeah, I gotcha.
Exactly. I mean, the whole marriage thing is that you do what you're supposed to do in order to keep the peace and not try to saying no. Well, I did, and then all the dizzy spells went away, and everything else was calm, and I was back in my office one day, and I got a call from the doctor who did the x-rays because they wanted to do further tests just in case it was something other than just an infection of some kind. And he says, Alan, I have some news for you. He says, you have an unruptured brain aneurysm.
Ugh. That's not good.
So, no, and I shut the door, and I said, well, where is it? It was almost comical. I mean, he said, well, it's in your brain. And then he had me put my finger on
my
forehead.
On your brain, obviously.
Well, he had me put my finger on my forehead and said, it's about an inch deep. It's serious. You have to get it taken care of. And gave me a recommendation on a neurosurgeon in the area. I was just devastated, and I was actually in denial, thinking some poor guy out there has a brain aneurysm, unruptured, and is walking around without knowing it because he called the wrong person. I was actually trying to just dismiss it. And the whole conversation was surreal, and I of course, you know, finally got to understand because he was determined that I would understand that this is not something to dismiss. Because
right.
I had a busy day ahead of me, and I had things I had to take care of and all that, and I just didn't know what to do. So I began to take it in, and I went out to the hallway, and I sort of walked down the hallway, and I thought to myself, this is not right. And then I began to realize how significant this was because we were in the middle of a book tour because of our book about Katrina, and that was really a big deal and a lot of interviews. We were in the middle of working on another book for the following year that the publisher already had us doing, and I just had to have my brain working properly, and I didn't have time for any kind of procedures that would have to take place. And I was in the hallway at the elevator, and I was sort of beginning to understand the significance of this, and I kind of broke down. I fell to the carpet, and I began realizing how awful this would be because I've always been independent, didn't like people helping, and I didn't really like people very much at all because of all the problems I had viewing what humanity had to offer during the police work. And I had friends and all, but it wasn't, you know, it's always been a distant relationship because of that feeling there will always be a need that I couldn't supply to people. And I sat there and I began to realize that a lot of this was coming from my father who had a very awful stroke when he was young. So I just basically had a father who was in suffering pain, constantly in need of help and people attending to him because his brain broke. And I was thinking, I don't have a broke. If my brain doesn't work, I don't want to be one of those people that are constantly in need of help.
Right.
And in no way am I saying that people with any kind of brain damage don't live fulfilling lives. Of course they do. But for me personally at that time, because of my father, I was really not ready for any of this. And I thought of him howling to the air, to whatever invisible thing is in the air he howls to all the time because he's so traumatized if things, you know, don't work out a certain way or something is not happening with he's by himself or he wakes up from a nightmare. And I felt the same way. I felt like howling to this empty sky, just something so I could just let it all out.
Right.
And then I thought to myself, if I had this kind of reaction, what would Linda be when she would have a reaction finding this out too? And she would, you know, and that's the one thing that men don't like is for, you know, women when they do show emotion.
Right.
Perfectly normal, but somehow was not the best thought. So I decided to not tell her, which to me was in my mind, but knew for a fact that would never work.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe she can go visit her parents or something during that week or whatever I need to do. And I went back to the office after I straightened up. You know, I don't know. Sometimes this is something that men do, but I asked myself inwardly, I said, you know, and this is silly, but I asked myself, what would Spock do from our favorite show on TV, I guess, you know, the Vulcan guy. And I thought, well, he would look at this with logic and reason and do research. So I went back to my office, closed the door, took an extended lunch and did some internet research on brain aneurysms and the procedures that need to take place in order to make sure they don't bleed or bust or do anything that would cause death or major brain damage. And I didn't find anything positive. Everything was just so completely beyond my understanding of you know, procedures that would always come across and be normal and all the other things. And so I went ahead and continued looking. I did find a couple of websites that had, you know, normal, factual things without all the emotions and all the people talking about their experiences. And so I decided to myself I was going to write a fact sheet for Linda so she could be eased into the whole situation. And I went ahead and did a beautiful one-pager, you know, step-by-step what the options were, resources. I even called the open brain surgery a surgical procedure, like you're having your tooth filled or something. It was something that would be very, very neutral. Well, I took this beautiful work of art home, and I gave it to my wife. And this is all under the assumption that she was going to be weak and start crying, because that's what men think sometimes women do. I guess you kind of, you know, these preconceived notions sometimes don't really work when you actually look at the reality of it. Well, I gave her this beautiful fact sheet, and she looked at me and she said, "Alan, you have an unruptured brain aneurysm. You're going to have brain surgery, and you gave me a memo?"
Gosh, yeah.
It was so funny. I mean, those are exact words. And then I realized, I was about to say, well, I really didn't think I needed to tell you, but I stopped because I saw the look in her eyes.
Yeah. No look.
We stop just in time before it goes too far. And then finally I realized that probably it wasn't the best of ideas, but I did go over and held her hand, and then we talked about the future, and we talked about the, you know, what's at stake. And she did cry a little bit, but it wasn't like overwhelming. It was still within reason. I could handle it. And that's really what, if guys are listening out there, if you have a crisis of any kind, don't write memos. Just go talk to your spouse or whoever that is there.
Great
that
advice.
Needs to know and
yeah, great advice for all the men out there. That's great.
Oh, gosh. And it's good, too. I mean, really, when you do it the right way by being there emotionally and even, you know, in any other way for someone who needs to learn the bad news, the whole experience is a good experience because both of you are going to grow and become closer because of that. Sometimes fact sheets, which I thought was a brilliant idea, kind of says a lot about sometimes men are not that bright, but at least we know that... That's not a good idea if anyone wants to go that route. Well,
yeah.
The dog, Leaf, has been with us through all this, and he realized that some awful thing has entered our home. And from that point forward, he began being so affectionate and so sweet. And, you know, even though he still trembled a little bit when you touched him and he still had his issues, he was much, much better because he knew he now had a job to do, and that was to helped me through this, and it was such a sweet thing. I remember I wrote so much about him, all the different things he showed me when we went to dog park and when he did different things, and he was just this, you know. There was one time prior to the major things that were going on with both of us that we were walking down the sidewalk, and he kind of growled, and when a lady came up and tried to, you know, kind of thrust her hands at his face to pet him, and she backed off real quick, and I was so annoyed with him. We got in the car, and I was going to take him over and let him run a little bit at the dog park, and I lectured him. I said, "Leaf, I want you to do one thing for me. I want you to be nice to the next person you meet. I don't care how you do it, what you do, just be nice. That lady back there was only wanting to pet you. There was no reason for you to growl. I know it looked scary, but that was not the case, and you know better than to growl at people. We've gotten past that." And he was yawning, looking out the window, looking like he totally ignored me. Well,
right.
We went over to the dog park, and there was this older man with a little white dog, and he was throwing the tennis ball, but it was very hard to throw, and it was very hard to get up and get the ball when the little white dog didn't bring it back. And, we, you know, I threw the ball a couple times for Leaf, and he came back, and then he was looking at these two, and he saw the older man having a hard time walking and the little dog not wanting to bring the tennis ball back because it was too big of a ball, for one thing, for the dog to get with his mouth. And the man threw the ball pretty far that time, and Leaf ran over and brought the ball back, walked back to the man, and dropped it at his feet. And then Leaf gave me that look as if to say, "See, I can be nice." And then the man looked at me and says, "Your dog is really nice." And I thought, well, okay, maybe he was was listening. It was really, really a great experience to see him actually pay attention and actually do something that was purely a nice thing to do.
Oh, that's great. How did you and Leaf, I mean, how did he help get you through? Obviously, you were helping him get through a lot of his issues. How did he help you get through, you know, your health crisis?
Well, there was a couple of things that happened, and this is really kind of interesting. And I want to tell you what led up to some of the things that he was able to do. One was I had a dream. It was a vivid dream. One of those dreams that, you know, is more real than what you ever think it'd be. And, you know, a lot of people have those type of dreams. I mean, I think statistically over half the American population, when they did a poll, said that they have had religious or mystical experiences in their lives. And so it's not exactly one of those things that people, you know, people just dismiss anymore, because they're quite significant and real, and most everyone's lives, in what I can see, most people are pretty open to it. I had this vivid dream, and in this vivid dream, I was looking at this large, massive line of people, all these people that were going into this massive structure, sort of moving structure, organic, and I learned it was called the Building of Life. And all these people were going into go into the libraries, have relationships, look at oceans and architecture and read and all the things that you have in life available to you to experience to the fullest. And every one of these people had a ticket in their hand. They were going to be allowed to continue with their lives and do all the things that they knew. Now, my wife was in there, friends, people that I knew, all were in this massive line, people I never saw before, others that I might have met some part of my life, but they all had a ticket, and they were all moving very, very fast. Well, I was trying to get in. I actually moved into the line itself, three, four, five across sometimes, and I moved in trying to get into the line, and I looked down at my hand, and I realized I didn't have a ticket. I didn't have any piece of paper showing that I was supposed to continue my life. And all these people looked at me, and they said, "You don't belong with us. You don't belong here. You don't have a ticket." And actually, they were kind of growly. They were annoyed that I was even trying to get into the line. And I left the line, and I just didn't know what to do. There were no ticket agents. There was nothing that allows me to move and continue with my life. And I was just traumatized. I woke up in a sweat. I was actually realizing that maybe on some level, maybe a subconscious level, was trying to reach me, letting me know things that I really couldn't accept consciously, and in a way that maybe I could begin preparing for something that was not really what I was expecting the future to bring, because this was discovered as such an odd situation. You know, for there were these type of things. There are never symptoms. That whole dizzy thing was not even part of it. That was something else. Nothing, this brain aneurysm was discovered purely by accident.
Right.
So I got up, and Leaf actually jumped up, and he was so sweet. He was actually there comforting me, looking in my face. He was there and making sure that I had a soft landing as I came back and woke up in this nightmarish understanding that things were not looking good. Well, later that morning, I told Linda about the dream. And, of course, she's turned white, and she asked me, well, you know, did you go back to the dream and try to make any changes? Did you do anything that... you know, a more proactive way? And I said, no, Leaf, you know, I woke up from the nightmare. And he was sitting at my feet and listening to every word, and I had the hand up with no piece of paper in it. I was telling her about it. I was just didn't have a ticket. And it was really a lot of emotion coming out of me, because I realized it was something that maybe I should, of course I should take care of, pay attention of. And later on this morning, he did something he'd never done before, and it was the strangest thing, you know, listening to me and watching us as we were talking about this dream. He pushed papers off the coffee table in the living room, some magazines and newspapers, and began ripping them up into little pieces of paper, into slivers. And then he would gather those little pieces of paper in his mouth and bring them over and try to get me to take them. And Linda says, what is going on here? He said, I've never done that before. At the time, I was too much into my own feelings to think about the significance of what he was trying to do. Well, I just got him up, and I said, no, and I put it away. And then he went back and got some more paper, slivers of paper. And he brought them back, trying to give them to me. And when I didn't accept them, he just dropped them at my feet. And, you know, it was just... a way of letting me know that we are all connected, and connected on a far deeper level than we often want to admit, because it was significant to me to have.
It was like he was trying to give you the ticket, right?
Exactly, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Just want to make sure that I had that. Yeah, because that's what I'm like seeing, and it's amazing that he understood your dream. You know,
he
understood that this nightmare, and then tried to fix your problem. I mean, that's amazing.
It was him reaching out. Yeah, exactly. He wanted to make sure I knew that I was going to have that piece of paper. If he had anything to do with it, that ticket. Oh, he was such a sweetheart. And he, of course, I didn't understand the time. I picked everything up and I put it on a higher place so he couldn't get any more paper to tear up. Both Linda and I were just surprised that he started this behavior. I wasn't thinking straight at the time because of the fact that I had all this other stuff going on. And later, there's something else that happened related to this that really helped me through the surgery itself, because he was just really determined that I would have that piece of paper so I can continue with my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really amazing. And I know you've referred to him as your spiritual partner. What do you mean by that? I mean, you talk about him saving your life, and you talk about him being your spiritual partner. What does all that mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. I don't think there are very many accidents in life. I think pretty much everything is going to be happening for a reason. And I think there might be reasons, you know, that try to help us all become, I don't know, the word would be better. I mean, if I in this world was a person that was able to generate or give or be more loving or more empathetic or more able just to be, let people be and give goodwill and not have all that other stuff kind of messing up what could be just a way of giving back to the world that brings more love. And that's basically it. If I can learn that in my day, if I can bring more love to this world, if I didn't have all this baggage, if I learned to trust, if I learned that people, not all people are going to be good, but not all people are bad. And when I got Leaf, we decided together as a partnership, and I dare say it's definitely a spiritual partnership because, you know, consciously, in a logical way, and even an emotional way, we weren't necessarily suited to be, you know, each other's partners because he had so many needs, and of course I had so many issues and needs. So we basically became spiritual partners, and we were going to help each other. I was going to help him become the best dog he can be in life with the love and with the joy of bringing people joy and doing all the things he can do. And I was going to become a better person with more spiritual qualities that I would think love and empathy and courage and all the things that make us better would be considered on the spiritual level, spiritual qualities. So that's how I would interpret our relationship. Every single day as a partners in life, we look and be the best we can be because the other one is there showing the way, whether it's me showing him the way of trusting or maybe him showing the way of trusting. There's so many different stories and so many things I wrote about over this relationship of him and what I learned from him. It goes all in on. There's an example. You know, right before the surgery, I was just still in the state of mind where I didn't want anyone to know and I didn't want any help. Well, we went down to the Mississippi River, and I walked with him near the Mississippi River, and there was a lot of movement in water. Sometimes it's very slow, sometimes it's very fast. Well, I throw the ball sometimes in the river, and he goes, runs after it and brings it back, but it's not too deep. Well, this time I threw it out a little bit too far, and he was squealing. He just didn't want to take chances. He says, you know, a Cocker Spaniel, short legs, and of course it would still be up to my knees or even a little higher, and I would walk out and get it for him if he was going to didn't want to do it because I didn't want to be frightened. Well, I was about to take my shoes off, and this other dog, maybe about the same size as Leaf, but a little bit heftier, looked at the ball, looked at Leaf, and ran out and swam out and brought the ball back and dropped it at Leaf. that dog helped leave without even being asked. And it seems like, well, I just began to realize there really isn't a terrible situation to ask people for help. And even if you don't ask, let them help you when they ask to help you or be there for you. Just a little example in a big world of one thing this dog did, and another dog came by. And the family were sweet, and they were, you know, they were basically, you know, that's nice, and Leaf got his ball, and everyone was happy. But there was just that little event in my life that let me see that, yeah, in my situation, there's nothing wrong with asking for help.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about getting a little off the story a little bit. Tell me about the Angel Animals Network. What is that? What are you guys doing there?
Well, when we were we moved up after in I think it was 96 from Atlanta after doing all that type of work down there, and we came up here for jobs and for a different life because, you know, Minnesota's so interesting. I recall, I mean, we walked around. But one thing about Minnesota, I just wanted to mention this one thing. My wife moved up here first when I got a job, and then our kids graduated, and they wanted to stay in the South, so we moved up here for a job. And my wife showed me around the city. First thing she did was the one to show me something special. So we went under an underpass, and she said, look at all that graffiti there. Do you see the fact, compared to Atlanta, that everything is punctuated correctly and everything spelled correctly? And said, education is really big in Minnesota. So I began to realize, after I got the humor of it, that she really did mean it. She comes from an education background, so she did like the fact that at least they tried to get it right with some of the graffiti in the Twin Cities. So that was kind of nice. But when we moved up here, we walked around one of the lakes, and this was with Taylor, our beloved yellow lab, and she was always grinning and smiling as we were walking. And people walked past us, and they grinned and they smiled. And even those that looked like they were having a bad day were just so happy because Taylor was so happy because she loved her walks. She just was bouncing around. People would stop and say, do you know your dog is smiling? And, you know, she was just a joy. And Linda and I looked at each other and he said, well, we've always loved dogs. We've always loved animals. Why don't we write about those animals? And the moment she mentioned that, I recall the time when I went on a call in Atlanta as an officer to a domestic. And I remember the snapshot I took when I was in that apartment on the ground floor. The man and woman were just screaming and hollering. It was probably drug-related and all that. There was a little boy, maybe 8 o'clock, with eight years old, and with a little dog next to him. It looked like maybe a partial pit bull, but it was small, short-haired, and was licking his face during all this pandemonium and craziness that was happening around him. And it occurred to me at the time that this was the only adult in the room with that dog. And I realized at that moment, one day I want to share that. I want to make sure people see that, see the significance of having an animal, a pet, an animal companion, a family member that's not human, but a family member that's going to be there for you during those times when you really do need that comfort and that protection. Well, I did all the appropriate work and got them separated and made sure that there was not going to be any other issues that night. But I remember taking a snapshot, and I remember going home that night to our dog at the time would just, you know, this was like late at night and everyone was asleep, and she would just come over and melt into my skin, almost just letting all that negativity, all that stuff just ooze out of me so I can just relax and not have all those visuals anymore. Well, we were walking around the lake here, and we thought to ourselves, well, you know, this is something we really do want to do. We're going to have to work the rest of our lives, but how can we do something that would bring love back into this world and do the things that would show people the significance and the spiritual significance of having and learning from animals in your life? What are they going to show you? Of course, a dog's going to show you how unconditional love works.
Yep.
A cat's going to show you all the things that cats show you. Maybe a bird, maybe animals in nature. So we decided to do that. We decided to go ahead and ask those basic questions. Has an animal showed you a spiritual quality such as love or courage or empathy in your life? Have you grown because of an animal in your life? And back then there wasn't a lot of internet, but there was a few news groups which I posted on. And also there was not, you know, we just basically went around to the grocery stores and to the coffee shops and posted on the board. Within 60 days, we had hundreds of stories.
Wow.
Finally, someone said, you asked the right question. it's not about training. It's about what you are learning or how you are growing because of that relationship. And we started a printed newsletter, and it was it went out every other month, and it was subscription-based, and we actually were doing so well with it, we had to open a remote office in London because of all the British and the people in England. They love animals, so they really were liking this newsletter. And after a while, we decided to go ahead and write a proposal, get an agent, and then have the first book published called Angel Animals. It was about all the animal stories that we were getting in, the ones that we could get in. It was the subtitle was Exploring Our Spiritual Connection with Animals. And Penguin Dutton was the publisher at that time. Our agent got that. It was really well received. Even Willard Scott on the Today Show held it up and said to the world during his weather segment, a great little book about animals. And he just started, because he's a big dog lover too. So you know, we were just so excited because the first book was really being received well and people were liking it. And that's how Angel Animals started. And from that point forward, we wrote articles. We did columns in various magazines. We've been working with a lot of newspapers because they're always wanting more information about that aspect of having an animal in your life. And basically started writing a book, sometimes two books a year since that time, and we're up to 15. It's been published in various languages. The Japanese Animals and the Kids Who Love Them just published that one in two editions because in the way they do their publishing, it's much larger. And Italian, Brazil, of course, English, UK editions of it. So we have been having a really good time because people like that question. And when they start talking about what their animals mean to them and how they become better people because of that relationship, It just comes in massive amounts of sincerity and love. And animal people are just wonderful people in the first place. But then when they have a way of expressing their love by sharing a story about their beloved dog, cat, or whatever pet they may have. And, of course, we have some stories that are in Animals of Nature. A lady wrote about her experiences out in the ocean swimming off of Hilton Head, and sharks were around her, and then the dolphins came and saved her. I mean, all these different things are out there, and it's just wonderful how we can allow that to happen and share with other people. We also wrote a book about pet loss and, of course, the Katrina crisis, which is now being used in many of the universities in their classes on what the animal rescue movement is in this country and what it meant during that time period.
Are you there? Are you
yes.
still there? Oh, okay. Something went wonky there for a minute.
I might be need to talk louder.
No, it was weird. It kind of just went all staticky. Like, I don't know. It could be. I'm on Skype, so it could always be Skype. You never know. But yeah. So what was the book about? What was the premise of the book about Katrina? All the animals that were abandoned, or not necessarily abandoned as much as they were maybe I don't know what you call it. They become homeless because maybe the people didn't survive or the homes didn't and people couldn't take their animals with them. How was the research for that book? What was involved?
Well, I basically interviewed about 250 people. We interviewed the animal rescue people. We interviewed the organizations. We interviewed the politicians that were in the area of the Gulf Coast during the crisis. We went down there and talked to a lot of people we wanted to document what happened and how to make sure that people are ready for other crises and other disasters that will be coming up, and all the different things that could have been done better. But we basically documented the crisis and documented the national resources that went down there to help. Basically, animal rescue people are the best people in the world. They went down to an area of the country that was in crisis. They had all the different, basically the whole city was going in going down the tubes. There was gunfire, there's chaos, civil unrest, everything was happening. And instead of staying home, they left jobs, they left their families, they left to go down there and help people and animals and we document a lot of this. There's one little story I want to share about the about what happened. Chris Cutter was the communication director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and he worked on a boat and maneuvered through toxic water with some of the other volunteers from his organization. And basically, it would have he spent a lot of time trying to go ahead and rescue animals, but the water was so toxic and it was so polluted, he did see a dog swimming in the muck, and he steered his boat towards the dog. And this is an interesting aspect of this. The dogs and the cats and all the animals that were left down there because of the way that the country treated animals in a sense back then when there was no shelters for them, there was nothing in emergency shelters for these animals to be in. Instead of allowing the rescues to help him into the boat, the dog swam away. And they were there to save his life, but he swam away. And he went, and then they heard barking coming from inside a house that he was swimming to. The rescuer steered to follow the dog, and he led him back to his house, where a female dog and what Chris called his girlfriend was trapped inside. And then the rescuers freed the female dog, brought the big shaggy dog into the boat, and only after that female dog was in the boat did he jump into the boat also.
Wow, that's
after
amazing.
The boat moved away, the dog's girlfriend had been in prison. One of the woman's rescuers petted him and saying, "You're such a good boy." And as she touched him, a sizzling stove kind of feeling happened on her hand. She jerked her hand off. Her hand was burning because of the toxic stuff that was in that water at the time of the flooding.
Oh my God!
You know, Chris said, instead of swimming off, we would go back and find his girlfriend. When you're dealing with things like that, it's not hard to think that there's a validity in what you are doing, that there is something bigger going on, and that's what this whole thing is about: the human relationships with animals, with pets, with animals in nature. There is something bigger going on, and it would just be wonderful if people began to really understand that significant, that bigger aspect of what their lives could be if they just recognized it and got past this whole, humans are it sort of viewpoint. I get a little talkative about that topic.
No, and you're right. You're right. I mean, it's been known, animals have been known to have almost like a psychic connection. They can sense a lot of things. Like there are stories that cats don't stay in the house with someone who is dying. There are stories about, of course, animals who will just so many different things about, you were talking about animals and that unconditional love thing, and there's so much to that. I mean, they actually do unconditionally love you, and unconditional love is a rare thing in this world. I mean, it just is. We put conditions on pretty much everything. So to have an animal unconditionally love you, and for someone to take advantage of that, it just makes people crazy. I mean, it just makes you crazy to think that people abuse animals and don't treat them well. I mean, they've been known, how many times have you heard a story about animals that start going wonky before a flood or a a tornado or some kind of natural disaster? There are so many amazing stories out there about I really think it's a psychicness that animals have.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a spiritual connection. It's something, and they just can't talk. They can't tell us, but they tell us in their own way. I mean, like Leaf did with the paper. I mean, that's an amazing way of him knowing what's going on. And how did he know what you dreamt? And how did he know what you needed? How did he know? I mean, that's just, it's amazing. It really is. It truly is. That's an amazing story. But like you said, there are so many stories out there. And I'm sure, when you go to your website where all your books, I think, are on angelanimals.net, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so if anybody that wants to go to angelanimals.net, you can see all the books about different situations that Alan and his wife have written about.
Alan and Linda have written about, because it's amazing. I mean, it just is. Let's talk a little bit about A Dog Named Leaf. Let's talk about that book specifically, because that's your latest book. And tell us what is it really about? Is it about how he got you through this very difficult time, and how you got him through, after rescuing him and bringing him home, and being able to fix a lot of his problems from probably an abusive background before he met you?
Right. Yeah. There's one thing, and I want to ask your opinion on this. If you can, let me tell you what happened. And there's a lot of people that really like this, and some are saying it's all in your imagination. But I wanted to share with something that was kind of significant. It actually was very significant for me because it helped me through this. I was in the hospital, and I was going to go and being checked in and going to go have the surgery, the brain surgery. And prior to that, there were other things going on too that caused me to think this was not really going to turn out well. In other words, the building of life story, it was actually going to come to place. Well, I went in, and they were wheeling me in to the surgery, and I remember seeing Leaf in the waiting room, and I was hoping he was in his daycare watching Animal Planet, which they have a nice big TV for the dogs, as fun as that might seem. So I was going into surgery, and I was worried, and of course I was, thinking about it and kind of stressed about it, and I went in there, and the mouthpiece that they bring down to put you to sleep began coming down. Well, at that moment when it started coming down, and this is only maybe 2-3 seconds at the most, I saw a Leaf in my mind's eye, and he had a piece of paper in his mouth. Now, up to that point, I had no idea what that was about. I was just sort of in my own world trying to get through this. And he dropped the piece of paper, and I reached out in my mind's eye inwardly, and I picked up the piece of paper, and I realized that this was my ticket to life.
And I relaxed. Yeah.
And in my mind, and with him looking at me with all that love and adoration and all that respect and all the things that one wants to, others to view him, it was just the most beautiful moment. And then when the cover for my mouth and nose came down, I was actually relaxed, knowing I was going to get through this. And it was so real, and it was so perfect, and it was exactly what I needed, and it was real to me. That's what I shared in the book. I really, people will have their own thoughts on this. It doesn't matter, because it helped me when I was needing help.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great story, and honestly, you can make your energy and the way you're looking at a situation can make it manifest itself. I mean, some people will say that your attitude and your fear can actually become a prophecy that you've made up for yourself, because your self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, you can sit there and think you're going to die, and can you possibly manifest that death? I think so. If you're actually totally on a soul level convinced, I'm not going to make it through this, I think that can happen. To see that ticket and be able to be put to sleep. Everybody fears. I know the first time I had to go be put under, to put to sleep for anything, was probably my wisdom teeth, actually, when I was in my 20s. But I remember thinking, what if I don't wake up? I mean, what if I just never wake up? It's scary, let alone going in, and that was for wisdom teeth, let alone going in for brain surgery. It's got to be terrifying. And so, of course, you would have fear. That would be normal. But to be able to, see that piece of paper and know, okay, everything's going to be okay, you probably saved your own life,
Yes. Yes, I appreciate that. I really know that for me it was a real event. And I know that he played a very important role for me to make it through this, and And even with all the pain and all the recovery stuff afterwards, it still worked out very, very well in his life, because I was able to continue being his partner, in spiritual partner in life, and both of us were able to have experiences and continue to enjoy life for what it could be, and that's a growth situation where we become more than we were before.
Absolutely. You know, I am in total agreement. There are no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. Divine guidance, whatever you want to call it, but everything happens the way it's supposed to. And I think you talk about some prophetic dreams and visions that you've had. Can you talk about some of those?
Well, the dreams and visions I was having, you know, a lot of the stuff that was happening to me was those massive amounts of visuals that pour into the brain from previous experiences, especially when I was doing the law enforcement work in South Atlanta. And it was just constant. And, of course, there's so many regrets, how you could have said something or done something when it comes to family and other things. But it was like seeing hundreds of cards just flashing on my brain. And those type of things told me that, you know, maybe there was something where I was actually preparing to move on, because it was just a flashing of my life in front of my... And this was in normal daytime hours when I'm driving or when I'm at work or when I'm home. It just starts, and then after a while it stops, but then it comes back another day or two later. That was interesting. It just was not me, and it was different. And it was all in this time period where there was going to be brain surgery and where there was a blood clot that they discovered accidentally because of the surgery that was coming up, where it was aimed for my heart, or they had to filter it with metal filter. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that happened, and these type of flashes happened. Now, of course, the dream caused me, the vivid dream of the building of life caused me to start creating a manual just in case things didn't work out, so my wife, Linda, could have all the things that need to happen with banks and with accounts and with all the passwords and all the internet and all the book stuff. I need to make sure she knew exactly what she had to do and what was our commitments and what needed to be accomplished. Now, that was depressing, because I was working on this manual every night after work, waiting, you know, prior to the surgery, and Leif was sitting next to me, and he just looked so exhausted. He looked like all he wanted to do was be a dog. I was supposed to rescue him from the shelter, and at that point, during those times when I was in my worst state, he was there at my side, taking it in and doing all he could to help me through every single experience prior to coming out of this surgery successfully. Oh, one other thing. This was really funny. Now, I'm going to tell you this because I know there are other people there in your audience that may be having or will be having challenges in their lives, really crisis situations. The doctor, the neurosurgeon that we went to visit prior to the surgery to get his opinion and thoughts, we went into the room, and he wrote a book. He has journals. He basically been published, and he's one of the experts in the whole country on this type of surgical procedure, which is basically opening and going into the brain and taking care of fixing the problem.
Right.
Well, he came into the room. And have you ever watched that program, Doogie Howser?
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that. That was a long time ago. Yeah.
That's what he looked like. He looked like Doogie Howser.
Oh, God.
No, he was so young. He looked like a little child. And I was thinking to myself, and even I looked back at Linda, and she said, and he did his section, and that was in there, and he thought it was the funniest thing, and he gave the okay because he wanted to make sure that, we had that humor in it, too. But I looked at Linda, she whispered, I didn't understand what she was saying, and then when we left, she told me Doogie Howser, which he looked like exactly. But I was thinking to myself, well, at least young people have steady hands, since he's going to have to do some very delicate stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But don't judge anybody by their cover. Realize the background, see the books, read his journal articles, whatever it is to show that his credibility or his capacity to do a good job is there, no matter what the person, what sex the person is, how old the person is. If they know what they're doing, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a perfect example of, you know, sometimes you think, I think that just happens to all of us as we get older. You know, we sit there and we're like, holy crap, why does everybody look so young? I do that with kids driving.
I see people driving, like, there is no way that kid's 16 years old. No way. Everybody, I'm like, yeah, this is, I guess, this is the kind of stuff that my parents used to tell me about. There's no way you're old enough to drive. You know, and I'm like, now I'm that person. Now I'm that person questioning me.
Isn't that awful?
It is awful. Awful. Anyway, so I want you to take a couple minutes and tell everyone, since we're at the end of the show, tell everybody how they can find out more about A Dog Named Leaf and about how they can find out more about the Angel Animals Network that you run, and anything else you want to let everybody in on.
Well, yeah, just visit angelanimals.net. You can also do .com. It goes to the same place. And go in there and look and see what we have to, that you might be interested in. The books are in there, all the newsletters. We have a free online newsletter you can subscribe to and actually share your own story in that newsletter. And it goes out to thousands of people around the world. And there's an archived, so you can see past newsletters. And if you also go in there, there's a whole video on YouTube, a whole video channel on the books and on the, you know, animals that we have written about. We go to Twitter and just say Angel Animals, and we're at Angel Animals. It's a Twitter account, and we send a Twitter out every couple of days. If you also want pictures of all of our books and all the animals and all the people that are in these books, you can go to Pinterest and just type in Angel Animals, and you go right to that page and see all the different aspects of what we do. Basically, anywhere in social media, LinkedIn, but angelanimals.net will give you a good start, and you can do a lot of basically going to different URLs to do and see anything else you might be interested in.
All right. That's great. And I really appreciate your being on the show. This is a great topic. I love talking about animals. I love animals, and I love the way that they add so much to our lives. I can't imagine not having my dogs. It's amazing, and I keep wanting another one. And you know, I keep thinking, I just want more of them, because they just give you so much love. It's so hard to not want a ton of them. But you know, and you really, you know, at some point you have to say enough, right? I mean, you can't have unless you want to run a kennel.
Boomer and Zeus could use another brother, wouldn't they?
I think they need a sister. That's my opinion.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's a debate I'm having with my husband right now, and he's just like, why? Why can't you just be happy with the two we have? I'm like, because you would have been happy with zero. I mean, I'm the one that started the dog thing. I want another dog. Yeah. Yeah, I do lots of complaining about that. But it's, I mean, they do. Our animals are amazing, and they're so full of love. And it's one of the few, I always say, you know, you get unconditional love from probably your parents, your children, and your animals, your pets. And that's pretty much it in this world anymore. I mean, it's truly... When you truly think about, you know, unconditional love, love with absolutely no conditions, it's a hard thing to come by these days. And thank goodness for our animals, for our animal friends, because they definitely give us that. So I really appreciate you being on the show and sharing the story of your story of the whole A Dog Named Leaf. But really, you're a very personal story about, you know, your illness and luckily very good recovery as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your being on the show again, and I hope you'll come back on.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your being on. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everyone, that is it for Just Believe this week. Absolutely check out the Angel, check out their websites, angelanimals.com or .net. And I'm looking because I just folded the paper and, you know, that I had this written on, and now, of course, I need it. Anyway, it's angelanimals.net, and like Alan said, you can also put in .com and it'll get you there. adognamedleaf.com, which will get you to the webpage about that book specifically. But if you go to angelanimals.net, you'll be able to find always everything that's going on with Alan and Linda, and be able to learn about all of the books that they've written. And it's a great site. I've visited it, and it is very interesting. So I want to, again, thank Alan for sharing his stories
his story with us and for sharing Leaf with the world through the book. Please take a minute also to visit my website, lisatarvis.com. You'll be able to find links for following me on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn and all of those fun things. You can also find links to where you can find my book called Just Believe, just like the radio show. Basically, the book is available on Amazon.com and at all other places that books are sold. And don't forget to visit the RightStream Radio Network's website as well and follow RightStream on Twitter and on Facebook. It's all under RightStream, WRITESTREAM. And the actual website for RightStream is RightStreamRadio.com. And if you go there, you can learn about all the different shows the RightStream Network has. We have Sundays. I kick off the week with Just Believe, and then we go Mondays with Military Monday with John D. Gresham, and then we go to Tuesdays with Daria Ann, who does Right Stream Tuesday, and Wednesdays we have the Family Power Hour, which is a really awesome show about we have an attorney and a psychologist, family psychologist, on, and they have an incredible show that gets tons of attention, and people really enjoy talking basically about all aspects of families, relationships, all of that. Then on Fridays, we have Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. I am a co-host on that show, and that is a women's topic show, and it's the newest show on the Right Stream Network, and we also have another one coming up soon, too. But you can see everything that we've got going on the Right Stream Network at rightstreamradio.com, and you can look for the radio shows. You can look and visit each of the hosts that are on the radio show and learn more about them or on the network and learn more about the hosts. And I think that's it. I think that's all I've got to say. So thankfully, I'm going to be done talking now. And it's been a great show, great week. Next week, guess what? It's a psychic show. We're going to have live psychic readings next week, the favorites of the listeners. So if you want to get on, make sure you call. Call the number 347-945-7246 and press 1. Do that next week. Anytime from 6:45 up until the end of the show, you can call. The sooner you call, the earlier in the queue you'll be. Just a little warning for everyone, a little insider information. If you stayed through and listened to this whole broadcast, you can have the insider information. I start actually writing down names in order in which they are received and answering the switchboard at about 6:45 Eastern time on the nights we're having live psychic readings. So that's what we're going to be doing next week. And again, thank you so much for listening to Just Believe, and I will see you all next week. Goodbye, everyone. Have a fantastic week.